listening to the Top Music Guitar Podcast, the show for guitar teachers to learn about the craft of teaching great guitar lessons that students love. If you're looking to start or expand your studio and make guitar teaching your full-time dream job, you've come to the right place. Each week, you'll get to hear from some of the top guitar teachers from around the globe and get their best tips and experiences so that you too can build your own dream studio. I'm your host, Michael, and I've founded one of the top guitar schools in Australia, written a best-selling curriculum, and I mentor guitar teachers. I'm excited to share my expertise with you and the wisdom of all the experts we interview. Make sure to subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. Let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Top Music Guitar Podcast. Today I've got a real treat, a very, very special guest, someone who lived probably about a kilometer away from me for many, many years and never caught up with him or took the time to meet him. But now that he's living in sunny Queensland, I'm still down here in Melbourne and we're pretty much the whole country of Australia away. We've actually connected and we're going to talk about some really, really amazing things. So let's welcome Brett Cusack of Glitter Fox Studios and The Confident Musician to the Top Music Guitar Podcast. Brett, welcome to the show.
Hello, Michael. Hello, listeners. It is great to be here. Thank you for having me on.
It's definitely great to have you. And yeah, no, I've sort of watched from afar, being kind of local level competitors, which in retrospect is kind of like a silly thing. I know us guitar teachers can kind of get competitive with each other and not want to share secrets or things like that. And but for someone who's like connecting with tons of great teachers through this podcast and through all different social networks and coaching formats, I just think it was totally silly to not reach out before now. So it's good to finally connect with you and meet you.
Yeah, it's definitely, yeah, I 100%, Michael, I knew you were there and I was kind of like, I'm staying in my own lane and doing my own thing. So yeah, it's kind of as we evolve more as business owners, we realize that the people that are doing the same thing are probably actually great allies as well. So it is great to meet and spend some time with you as well.
Yeah, 100%. I was having a similar conversation recently with someone else just saying, yeah, we always think of other people as competitors or rivals or things like that. And more often than not, we're pretty much the same people, the same personality, the same goals and dreams, doing great things for the next generation of guitar players or whichever instrument we happen to teach. And we can just get so much more out of life by collaborating and helping each other and getting further ahead, which is partly why we do what we do here at Top Music. But for the listeners who haven't met you before or might have seen a little bit of you on Facebook and social media, can you give them a brief overview of your background and your story so far?
I guess as a kid, growing up, I had musical toys, and then I got into music when I was probably a teenager. And I remember hearing the music of the Deftones in the music room at school. And I remember hearing it and going, what is that sound? And then my life was totally changed from that point on. And I started playing guitar all the time. And I also started singing at that time, but I don't really think I had the confidence in myself as a singer. I thought there were other people out there. So I kind of, you know, went through this whole process of learning the guitar and studying at university and playing all these bands and touring around Australia. But then there was part of me that's like, I still feel like I want to be able to sing. So I basically found a producer at that kind of point, and they helped me to start to develop my craft and start making original music. And I was like, this is awesome. And I pumped heaps of money into getting it produced and awesome film clips. And then I pushed it out all on the internet and I sat there. I'm like, yes, now I'm going to be famous. And not long after that, I was struggling in lots of debt and realizing that wasn't as easy as I thought it was going to be. And so it wasn't not long after that I met a mentor who basically said, Brett, you've got a music degree and a teaching diploma. How about we make help you to develop a business around your love of teaching music? And I was like, all right, cool. So I basically got really heavily involved in learning how to run a business. And I went into that whole process with rose-colored glasses on. And I'm like, yeah, this is going to be awesome and easy too. And then I had a rude awakening to help me realize that there was a whole bunch of things that I didn't know how to do, how to marketing, how to do onboarding. And I just wanted to teach all my students my own songs and they didn't want to do that. So I was like, oh, that doesn't work. So I got to learn a lot about people in that process. And in the last few years, I've started studying human behavior, and I realized that I probably lacked a lot of confidence in myself to become a singer. So got back into making music again recently. And then I realized that so many other people sort of lacked these professional level skills, like how to manage their emotions and how to deal with their mental health challenges. And so I was kind of doing that as a music teacher, but I kind of realized that I'd needed a new platform to do that. So I was very focused on helping kids learn music, and now I'm very focused on helping adults actually get back into making music and sharing their unique talents. So on one hand, I'm, you know, living my dream and doing the things that I love, but also helping other people develop these professional level skills. So that's kind of where I'm at the moment, is trying to find this right balance of myself as an artist and also myself as a music educator and as a life coach. So it's been a fascinating journey to this point.
Yeah. And it's fantastic to see that regardless of whether it's music lessons or coaching people and their own development, it's still this nurturing role that we have as teachers. So is that something you naturally gravitated towards, or did you have to develop that as part of the coaching and mentoring that you were sort of undertaking?
I think I definitely always had a part of me that wanted to help people, and I shift between like, no, I'm an original artist and I'm making music and I'm doing my thing, and then no, I'm an educator and I'm a teacher and I love helping other people, and it's like I kind of TikTok between these two identities, and I think I'm getting much better at actually having the thing down the center of those two things. But yeah, it definitely was a learning experience to learn how to actually build a business around those things. So was that your question? I can't remember. Feel free to keep me on track.
No, close enough. And I think, you know, a lot of teachers sort of come into teaching because they want to help people. They want to share their passion for music with others. And then they get a rude awakening, as you just said, with the business side of things, when they realize they don't know what they're doing, or there's things beyond their capability and capacity. So what were some of the hurdles that you sort of came across and found out that you needed help with?
As a music teacher or as a business owner?
Oh, a bit of both, whichever one comes up there.
I'll start with the music teacher sort of thing. I think I remember one of my first teaching gigs was working for another company, and I had groups of five kids teaching them electric guitar. And I remember turning up there and I was like, talking to the assistant principal of the school, I'm like, what do I teach him? He's like, that's your job. And I was like, oh. So it's like not even having a method or a program or anything to teach these kids. And then I remember, yeah, basically like playing them all this fancy Satriani guitar work and them looking at me with this blank look, and then playing like Happy Birthday and them going, oh, and lighting up. So, and then the other side of the coin was asking them when they came in the next week, like, how did your practice go? And they're kind of looking at me with this blank look going, practice? What's that? So I think probably the biggest thing for me was really listening and trying to discover what was interesting to my students and developing a program around them. And one of the other hurdles was dealing with the kids that are not actually interested in music, and then helping them have the joy and experience of learning music. Because if you're running a business, you want people to come back. And I'm not sure whether your numbers are the same, Michael, but the majority of my students are always kids, you know, late before they go into high school, probably 8 to 12 year old boys generally. Most of them are into football and Lego and all of these things. So for me, learning how to communicate music education in relation to football and Lego and all of these things, and actually creating these musical games and ways of communicating, was a really big learning curve for me to actually present things in the way that other people learn, as opposed to the way that I understood them. So yeah, that was a pretty big learning curve for me to really think about, what does this person, you know, value, and then how can I help them grow and expand in those things? So yeah, that's kind of where my human behavior training came into play, because I kind of came out of my music degree and tried to squish all my students into shape. You have to practice, you got to do this, and you got to do that, and you got to play scales, and you got to do music theory, which was an excruciating thing because I didn't really love doing those things either. So yeah, that was a pretty big learning curve in that space.
Yeah, 100%. And I think there's that whole academic approach to music where these are the things we must learn and we must focus on these to be a proper player. And so many teachers fall in the trap of going, this is the way I learned, therefore this is the way you should learn. It's just completely out of touch with, you know, most of the motivations of what our students, particularly young students, want to do. So would you say, did you have to use like particular analogies for the football players and Lego players, or was it sort of, you obviously presented it as, you know, their main motivations are these sports or very hands-on things. How did you translate that into guitar? Can you provide some examples of that?
Yeah, well, the first thing that I did was I had a thing that I called a student interest questionnaire. It's basically these seven questions that I would ask all the students to find out what was actually most important to them. So I had this list at the front of their folder. So every time they'd come in, I'd be asking them about football and cricket and logo and reading and all of these Lego. So I would develop this really strong connection with them because they knew that I valued what they valued. So some examples of making connections to music might be kids like practice this one little example two or three times. And I'm like, so who's your favorite football player? And I know what their favorite footy team is and blah, blah, blah. And they're like, oh, this person. I go, out of interest, how many times do you think they've practiced tackling or kicking goals or whatever? And they're probably like thousands. I go, so can you see connection where the amount of times you do something, the better you're going to get at it? And so they go, okay, cool. So how many times do you think you're going to need to practice this example on the guitar in order to get really good at it? And so they start to realize that to get really good at anything, that they're going to need to do this thing multiple times. And maybe also I'd put in there, I'm like, how many times have you put together that, your favorite piece of Lego? Or how many times have you, or how many hours have you spent, you know, reading, or how many hours have you spent doing those things? And they make these, and we start to make these, bridge these connections where the amount of effort that we put in is correlated to the thing that they're doing. So they actually see these logical ways that make sense to them, as opposed to me trying to say blah, 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 which I tried to do at the start. I'm like, no, you need to do it all like over and over again. And they're kind of like, but why? Yeah. So that's one example.
Excellent. And obviously a lot of kids can relate to that sports experience of just kicking the ball through the goals over and over, or running laps over and over. Or I always like to use like the weightlifting analogy, especially with like the teens when they start getting to that, like you just do three bicep curls, nothing's going to happen. You do 10 in a row over and over a couple of days, weeks, months consistently, then you get the big guns out. So that's when you start seeing, you know, the cogs start turning and they start getting it. But yeah, absolutely fantastic in terms of means of giving the students contrast and context for what they need to work towards. This just randomly popped into my head about 30 seconds ago, but I think the first time I actually met you was at a shopping center. And I think I could hear someone playing guitar, and I just come from the gym at Airport West or something. And I could just hear, I think it was the Harry Potter theme or something like that, just playing over and over. And I sort of, as I was getting closer to the hallways, and then, yeah, I saw you had a little stand. So how did you find, and this is a completely unrelated question, but getting into lead generation, how did you sort of go about generating leads for your school and finding students to work with you?
Yeah, probably the most effective of those things. I did enjoy doing those pop-up stalls in shopping centers at first. The first one I did, because it was new and no one had ever seen somebody doing it. I think I got like 70 inquiries or something, and I had maybe 10 students at that point. It just went, and I couldn't service them all, and I was like, nah. So that was a cool problem to have. And the other one, funnily enough, was like flyer drops, and just putting letter, like DL flyers in letter boxes. Like that was that, like, you know, looking at like getting a student maybe worth $1,400 if they stay for a year. If I got one out of it every 10,000, which I think took me maybe, I can't remember how many. I knew the numbers were okay. It was a tedious thing dropping so many things off and getting in very few inquiries. So. Yeah, that were probably the most productive things. But then I sort of started getting into more of like Facebook ads, and you get those sort of word of mouth referrals and things like that too. So yeah, at the beginning, that was a big outlay for that pop-up. I think I spent $2,000 every time I wanted to do that, and you had to stand there for a whole week pretty much. But the food chimes weren't very successful, and I was like, ooh, that's excruciating. But yeah, in the beginning to get my name out there, they were the good ones, yeah.
Yeah, and that's something I've seen martial arts schools do quite a lot, and not normally it's people like handing you fake money or car sale tickets, but to hear the Harry Potter theme playing through the corridors of the shopping center and luring people in, I think that was definitely stood out as unique.
Yeah, I had great mentors, and that's what they suggested, and I was like, $2,000 to do that, and then I had to get all the pop-ups, but yeah, I had all this money saved, and I was like, oh, okay, cool, well, you know, this is going to be an investment in my future, so. Yeah, when I talk to some of my, you know, potential business clients and things like that, then I say these are the action steps that I took in order to get where I got to. Yeah, it's like, oh, I made some big moves in order to move the needle on things. So yeah, it was definitely a risk, but I think it was definitely an educated risk, because I had two mentors at that time who were kind of, they were both doing that. So yeah.
Yeah. And in terms of like just touching on what you mentioned there, in terms of, you know, you invested $2,000, but you got a bunch of students. A lot of teachers are so frightened of advertising just in case it doesn't work. Or again, $2,000 sounds like a really big amount to invest, especially when there's a lot of uncertainty around it, but not realizing that if they know the lifetime value of their students and they know that if they only need to get, you know, say, for example, two students from that investment in order to make their money back, and then everyone else after that's cream on top, it's actually quite easy to set up advertising and keep on pouring money into it. As long as it's paying a return, you can't spend enough money.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But yeah, that was definitely something that if I hadn't done that before, that was definitely something pretty scary. So understanding now, having a different philosophy on spending money on those kind of things, that marketing is an investment in growing my business in order to have more potential clients and to be able to service them. So, you know, I see that now, but on the other side, I was like, $2,000. Wow. As I mentioned before, I was like, that was a lot of money. And then I had to have like all the extra stuff, all the pop-ups and the DL flyers and, you know, starting to create the systems of how to get people in and how to track who I'd spoken to and all of those kind of things. That was, yeah, that was a definitely a big learning curve to have all these numbers and then trying to facilitate them all into a timetable. And then, so, you know, it's I guess at the end of the day, for me, and now that I see it, it's like, it's me against me. So I was like, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do the hard thing to learn, but now I've done it. I'm like, okay, cool. Now I've got all of these skills that I can either repeat or that I've learned something from. Like, okay, maybe I can do something different this time. So would I do, if I was going to build a music studio up here, I might do that because it's probably something that people haven't seen before. So yeah, but you know, it's something that I would look into definitely.
Yeah, fantastic. And I definitely want to touch base and come back to that point there about the fact that you've just relocated literally from the bottom of Australia to Gold Coast. I always think of being the top, but it's only about two-thirds of the way up or just over halfway up. But you're at Gold Coast now, is that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Awesome. So you're up there on the Gold Coast, which is great. Now, before we do move to that conversation, you have mentioned the word mentorship, you know, a couple of times over and over. And you know, I know you mentor people and I do a similar capacity with guitar teachers as well, but how important has mentoring been to your growth, both as a person, as a musician, as a, to, you know, helping get you to where you are now?
Yeah. There's two sides to the coin. I think there's the part of me that doesn't know how to do something and needs to be able to speed it up. And then there's also the part of me that's like, I've got to actually still do the work. So mentors have been incredibly valuable to me in the sense that they just share with me information that I need to know on the other side. So if someone said, hey, Brett, do you want to do a pop-up in a shopping center near where you're running your music lessons? And it's $2,000. If I didn't have that mentor there to actually go, that's a good idea. And spending that money because this is the return on your investment and we need to do these numbers, blah, blah, blah. And that's been incredibly important. So for me, yeah, whenever I'm stuck now, it's kind of like I look out in the world. I'm like, who's doing this that I can actually pay to help speed up the process? Because I know that I can YouTube it and trying to figure it out on my own, but then I have to figure it out and there's all this trial and error. So yeah, it's definitely saved me thousands of dollars in trial and error. And because I'm investing in it, the information that I get, I put a very high value on. So that, you know, if I learned that same information from a YouTube video, I might not have as much of weight on it. So, you know, recently I spent $500 to get a half an hour session with a mentor around original music, and he's made $1 million from his original music. Like, how are you doing that? And so the information that I got in that, I probably have already know, but now that, because he's got that experience of the return on his investment, I'm like, okay, that's what I need to do. So that those strategies are down way more valuable to me than if I watched them on a YouTube video for free.
And definitely, yeah, once you've got skin in the game in terms of money you've invested financially, it also, you know, generally motivates you to work a bit harder or put it to use as well.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that.
What do you think, or what would you say to people who, you know, do see programs like your Confident Musician, which will turn up, or My Six Figure Program and things like that, and you know, they're either hesitant or they think it's a scam or it's too good to be true? What would you sort of give advice to people like that?
Well, I guess maybe musicians maybe might be guilty of like trying to test things in their own head. And I've probably done some programs and invested thousands of dollars in some programs that I'm like, maybe that wasn't worth what it was actually worth. But what I did get was a $2,000 lesson. in order to teach me that that's not the thing that I need. So whether I spent $2,000 and got heaps of value out of it, or I spent $2,000 and didn't get any value out, I got an incredibly valuable lesson in order to move forward with my career. So it sort of depends what kind of person you are. Like, I've definitely been on the side of things where I'm just like, I don't know whether that's really what I want to do. But I think at the end of the day, you need to step out and figure it out for yourself. And, you know, what I say to a lot of my clients at the moment is two things. I can do this when I'm trying to encourage them to invest in themselves. And let's find out. Because if we are always playing the game in our head, or just like, no, it's not the right time or whatever, we never really move forward in life, or we move forward in life so much slower than what we could if we, you know, put skin in the game. I definitely encourage people, if something is inspiring to you, or you're curious about it, or you keep clicking on it, invest in yourself to either learn some really valuable information or learn that it's not the strategy or the way that you want to do things. So yeah, from all the mentors that I've learned from over the years, there have been things that I've learned that I'm like, this is what I need to do for me. And this is something that I've tested, and now I know that it doesn't work for me. So it's always a win if, depending on how you look at the situation. So I've always grown in some way from everything that I've invested in.
And the biggest investment you can ever make is in yourself. There's obviously, you can invest too much and not get the value out of things, or go into things with a bad attitude. But especially with the way, you know, inflation is right now, banks giving you zero interest, crypto's down, all these different streams of investment are all giving really, really poor returns. But if you can invest in yourself and take that knowledge and use that to 10x your business, or get to that next level, or help more people, or get more clients, you know, it comes back in the biggest, you know, amount of return on your investment that you can get, whether that's personal development or a monetary figure as converted by your business or your product or what you're doing.
Yes, 100%. Yeah, you can't take away the knowledge and the experiences that you've created, but you can lose all your material possessions or your business or whatever it might be. So
yeah, and that might be, you know, a good little segue is, once you have the knowledge, because you, as we mentioned before, we're in Melbourne, and then you've moved up to the Gold Coast. So that must take a huge amount of courage and confidence, and knowing that you've already built one business or you've done it once, and having all that knowledge, you just got to go and do it again in another location. So I'll let you tell that story, but what sort of prompted moving right across Australia up north?
Great question. So 2020, there was a two, a zero and a 2-0. And my business kind of grew a fair bit at the start of 2020. I was like, yay. And then COVID. And then it just went. So, then once everything kind of went online, I'm like, I actually don't really enjoy going to the studio anymore. And I started to think more about, like, what's the kind of lifestyle that I want. So, towards the end of, end of 2020, my partner and I were like, maybe we can move coastal. And she's a bit of a lizard. So she, it's not probably the greatest descriptive word, in the sense that she likes being in the sun and she's always cold. So where we lived at that time in Melbourne was just this apartment on a bottom level. So it was always really cold. So basically, we were doing road trips down, or that was before COVID, but we're doing road trips down to Ocean Grove and all these coastal places. Like, we definitely want to live near the ocean. And then we're like, and if we like it here, maybe we'll move north later on. So long story short, we ended up talking to a friend of mine who lives up here for 8 years, and he said, man, in winter we're outside in the parks and it's just amazing weather, and we live near the beach and we've got, you know, the infrastructure and the culture and stuff's definitely getting better, and there's good coffee and blah blah blah. So basically Sarah and I looked at each other and go, let's do it. So on a knife's edge, knowing that I could now run things online, having no idea how to do that and not be in the same state. We sold the apartment and then started looking for rentals and made it happen. So yeah, big change, but it's definitely been a really cool experience to live in a totally different place, and actually go, is this where I want to be? And like, do I actually enjoy this? And I don't think we have any plans to move back to suburban Melbourne.
That's amazing. And what sort of hurdles have you come across, or challenges or difficulties have you faced, you know, reestablishing yourself two states away in a completely different area?
Yeah, there's definitely part of me that's a bit of a control freak. And with everything in the studio, I was still teaching a lot as well. So basically moving here forced me to have to step back and not be able to control anything, like not be able to control that the pillows weren't neat on the couch and not be able to rush to the studio if there was ever a problem, or be able to field, like be there when clients are coming in and out and doing trial lessons and all those things. It's just learning how to do things remotely was pretty challenging, because it's like, oh, this is not normal. Like when someone rings me and says, oh yeah, we want to get lessons, I'm like, yep, I'm located in the Gold Coast and the studio is blah, blah, blah. So I guess it was cool because it taught me how to trust in the team and that I've made the right decisions. And when there were problems, having to step into that manager role and basically facilitate all those problems and figure out how to manage the team and things from afar. So I think it was good in a sense that I couldn't control things on the ground. So I had to ask people for help and get the team to step up and do extra things and get things clean that I would normally do. So yeah, I think it was really valuable in the sense that it helped me to systemize or think more about the systems of the business as opposed to just being the I've got to do everything kind of guy. So I think that was incredibly challenging, but definitely better for character building and learning how to run a business that you're not in so much anymore.
Awesome. And is the studio, we had a bit of a conversation before, you're still running a school program. Are you still running your studio remotely?
So I decided that the studio wasn't something that I want to continue anymore. So I actually passed that on. I sold it to one of the teachers. So the studio side of things, because it just wasn't a business model that I wanted to continue and grow anymore. Most of what I did was one-to-one lessons. So now having understanding more about the business model, running group sessions, I found that was definitely more inspiring. And then for me as a professional, I wanted to help more people. And mostly my target audience now is like dads that haven't been in music for a long time, and getting them back into songwriting and helping them with all the other things that go around getting their confidence back up to actually make music. So yeah, that was definitely one of the hardest decisions I've ever made. This is this thing that I dedicated, you know, 10 years of my life to building. And that was always kind of the goal. This is where we're going. And then to actually transition that, I think it probably took me 12 months to actually go, okay, this is not what I want to do. And then actually to figure out how to move it on and make sure all of the players were supported in that too. So yeah, some really valuable experiences in there about just go, is this actually what I want to do anymore? Like 10 years ago, I was in my late 20s and just definitely a very different person, and business models change and financial targets change. So yeah, so that was excruciating to be able to let go of it and then still have it and then trying to figure out how that moves forward. So it's definitely an experience.
Yeah. And obviously during COVID, tons of teachers had a similar approach where they relocated, they moved online and never went back, or they passed on or had second thoughts about what they want to actually do. Was there any sort of criteria you had or assistance or thought processes you went through to come to conclusion that you were ready to move on and try something else?
I think I was teaching some beginner lessons and I was checking my phone. I was like, this is not okay. So in person, that lesson would have been probably a lot easier. I think I was teaching a really young beginner how to tune, and to my surprise, they were actually doing pretty well. But I was like, okay, this is not inspiring to me anymore. I'm not engaged in this situation. So yeah, that was definitely a pretty big turning point for me. So then I moved all of those students over to a team members before I moved into state. So then when we started going back to face to face, as I moved, they were back in person. So, but yeah, definitely very different dynamic. And I think the whole other thing too, I was teaching 5 nights a week and Saturdays. So my whole lifestyle was all wonky. And so then not teaching nights, I was like, oh, actually I can do stuff. I can go to gigs. And since being up here, I've done a few more open mic nights and songwriting nights and things like that. So actually just going, I actually enjoy going out and being part of the music industry. So I wasn't really doing that much in Melbourne. So very lucky up here on the Gold Coast that there's actually a pretty cool community of people out there making original music. So it's been great to focus my attention more on doing those kind of things too.
Yeah, fantastic. And yeah, it's probably one of the downsides of teaching, especially when you're running your own business and you're doing the 60-hour minimum work weeks, is the fact that everything is just built around those 4 o'clock p.m. to 8 o'clock p.m. kind of prime time teaching spots after school. You sort of take for granted that how much it impacts having a regular life.
Yeah. And so that was once we moved, because I also liked, because I had a studio, I was always leaving home to go to the studio. And then we were doing things online. I was home at night so we could have dinner together with my partner and then jump back into another lesson. So I was like, I actually enjoy working from home. I don't think I want to work from home all the time. But yeah, I was like, lifestyle-wise, traveling, you know, half an hour to an hour, and I was on public transport going back and forth to things. So it's like, I can, you know, I can write songs on my laptop and send emails while I'm on the tram. But it's like, oh man, that's like an hour, 2 hours every day of time that I can't do something else that I'd rather do. So yeah, lifestyle wise, I was just like, I actually prefer having a space to work from home. So that might change in the future. But yeah, that was a really interesting thing for me to go, well, okay, that's not really what I want to do anymore. So yeah, it's been cool to just go, what do I actually want to do? And stop letting my business dictate to me how my lifestyle is. So yeah.
Fantastic. So you've relocated, you've sold the business, which is a fantastic achievement in and of itself, but you've also launched a new project, and I believe it's called The Confident Musician. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about what you're doing with that?
That's correct. Yeah. So similar thing, we're doing music education, but we're more focused. Our target demographic is dads wanting to get back into music. So basically, I started to realize that, I'm in my late 30s and I love making music. And so work and all of these other commitments kind of took me away from my creativity. So I started realizing in my mindset coaching stuff that I was doing, we needed to help these people navigate back into doing something creative. So The Confident Musician is basically a space to come and get either upskill your music skills, like your singing and your guitar playing, come along to our songwriting and networking events where you can just meet other people that are similar to you that are, you know, wanting to get back into music and be creative as well. And then also I'm doing mindset coaching and business development and things like that as well to help people either build businesses around their talents and just to have somebody to hold their hand while they make transitions in their life to be able to do more of the things that they love to do and take back a bit of command of their own life and feel a bit more confident.
Yeah, and I've definitely seen there's a big focus on building confidence, on building the mindset. So what's some of the stuff you work on people in with people on actually working on their mindset and building their confidence and ability to move forward ahead with their careers?
Yeah, well, I guess at the end of the day, like the mind controls everything that we do. And you can only ever control three things, your perceptions, your decisions, and your actions. And so for most people, they make a new decision. I'm going to get guitar lessons again. And then they start taking that action step, but they never really change their perception of what that actually means and the dynamics of how that's going to shift and change in their world. So the analogy I always give is that you've made your new decision and you've started taking your new actions. And then 2 or 3 weeks later, you're back on the couch with a pizza and a beer going, I made the decision. Why am I not changing? Through starting to understand my own internal world and start to understand what some of the patterns and the limiting beliefs and the stories and the all of the internal dialogue that's happening and actually starting to understand what that is and actually bring it to the surface and start to process it. The problems behind the problems, as I like to explain, just started to help me change. And so if I didn't understand this information, I probably wouldn't have built a business. I probably wouldn't be able to take those big steps in the direction of my dreams. I probably wouldn't have got back into music. So because I know how to understand all of this internal world and change it in the direction of what it is that I want to be able to do, I realized that so many other people were having these same challenges that they want to get back into music, but they have no vehicle and they've still got these stories or limiting beliefs thinking that they're not worthy of being able to do the thing that they want to be able to do. So that's what I help people to do, is start to understand that there are some things happening underneath the surface that they don't want to look at, to be able to deal with that stuff so they can actually get back into making some original music or whatever it is that they want to be able to do.
Fantastic. So for our teachers listening here, do you have any practical advice on how they can work on reshaping and redefining the perception of their students in terms of their ability to learn guitar or succeed on the instrument or even go forward and achieve, you know, some more substantial things than just taking lessons and gig and write songs and all those things?
Yeah. So for music teachers, to help their students, well, I think at the end of the day, it's like you've got to be leading by example. And I think, you know, for me, I think many, many years ago when I started writing songs and bringing my songs into my students' lessons, I noticed that all the kids started making songs. And the same goes when I started decorating my guitars as pieces of artwork, then all my students started bringing in all this stuff. So I think for the teachers out there, starting to understand your internal world, because your students are always going to be in some way, shape or form a reflection of who you are. And I think as I've learned to move through my fears and my challenges, is like my students watch me by example, and they see me tackling all these challenges in my world in order to then go, oh, wow. And that's not to say that you need to be the most amazing guitar player in order to be the most amazing teacher. I think they're two different skill sets. But I do think that as you grow as a human being and tackle your challenge, whatever they might be, as in building a music teaching business or as a guitar player or both, that your students start to see your growth. And I think if you're trying to, at the end of the day, trying to solve a problem in your student that you haven't solved within yourself, it's going to be incredibly difficult because you're still going to be resonating at that same level. So I think the most important thing for any human being is to do their own work on themselves and to grow as a person, so that you then have a bit more self-belief and self-confidence to be able to tackle your demons and your challenges and to do more of the things that you want to do, so that then the people who then resonate with and want to be able to do that, they can do that as well.
Wow. Some really, really amazing stuff. And to pull out what you said, you know, find the problem behind the problem and work on it in yourself. I know that's a lot to take in, but listeners, write those ones down, hit the rewind button, listen to that three times and take it all in, because there's some really profound stuff there. In terms of guitar students who are listening or guitar players who are doubting their ability to become great players or to go out and do gigs and things like that, what advice would you give those?
Yeah, I was thinking about this question a little bit earlier. I guess for me, I don't love practicing, but I love performing. So for me, I think I was always the crazy guy doing crazy stuff, like saying, all right, cool, I'm going to do 12 songs in 12 weeks. Which is another story that we can talk about. But I basically committed to doing 12 songs in 12 weeks. And because I said I was going to write 12 songs in 12 weeks, I played guitar every day writing these 12 songs in 12 weeks. I took a gig many moons ago that was supposed to be 3 hours doing covers. And then they said, can you do all Australian covers? And I was like, yep. And then they said, can you do 4 hours? And I'm like, yep. So I had 6 or 7 weeks to prepare the guitar and the vocals for 4 hours worth of material. So because I put myself in that situation, I couldn't get out of it. This part of me is like, can I just not do it? So I think it's putting yourself in the arena to be able to tackle those challenges. And I guess as I evolved, I started to realize, okay, I'm just doing this because it's like the strategy that I've been using in order to get this thing. So what's a more effective way? And then learning how to like, okay, cool, I'm going to pick this one because this is actually what I really want to do. So as wisdom comes with, you know, doing those type of things, I actually choose to pick my battles more often than not now. So get in the arena and do the things you want to do. Like, and I think that the important thing is, you know, it's one thing to like have played in your bedroom and, you know, you can master all your scales in your bedroom, but as soon as you're in front of another human being, things is a completely different thing. And that might be the simplest thing would be recording it on your phone. And there's part of you that goes, someone's going to see this. And then maybe putting it online or then actually starting to do open mic nights or gigs, where you're actually out there doing the thing that you were inspired by in the first place, whether it was listening to your favorite bands on a CD or seeing them live in concert or, you know, being impacted. And it's about the human element and the entertainment value or the inspiration value. So as soon as you're actually starting to do more of those things, that's when your personal growth happens, because then people give you feedback and say, I liked it or I don't like it. And then you go, okay, cool. What can I learn from these things? So yeah, I hope that helps everybody.
I think that's going to help lots and lots of people to hear that. And yeah, we recently have like school concerts. It's so great to be back to doing shows post lockdown and pandemic and having those. But it was like one of those things where we sort of said, okay, now it's concert time. And half the students are like, yes, finally, let's get up on stage. And the other half are totally terrified. So for teachers who find like their students unwilling to perform or too nervous about it, is there any advice in terms of how to safely encourage your students to get up on stage and put them? And this is, I'll preface this, and I'm have to watch what I say because I'm on the podcast, but I'm a very like, you know, macho, tough, like get it done now kind of figure. And it's just like, come on, harden up. So for people who, and you get to that from constantly exposing yourself to challenging and difficult things, so that things which are totally terrifying to other people, you know, you don't second thought about. And I think we have an epidemic of people who are, you know, sheltered and uncertain about themselves. And I think partly because of social media, partly because of being locked up for 2 years, partly because of, you know, the world is just changing in so many different ways. So many people are unwilling to put themselves out there in risky situations or, I don't even know if risky is the right word, but, you know, somewhere where they do have to get up on stage and perform in front of people, that absolutely terrifies people. So in terms of helping our students navigate through that, particularly on the back of this pandemic where so many people are just completely nervous and scared about so many different things, what could we do there to help our students?
That's a very big question. I guess at the end of the day, like I've dealt with every kind of kid in this space now. Some kids are just like, yeah, they're that gung ho, like I'm on stage, and they're, you know, there's the one kid that's actually really good at playing, and that's great. And then there's the bunch that are happy to get up, but they're not that great at playing, but they're probably destined to be performers. But at the end of the day, like with the student interest list, that's basically their priority list. So the higher up music is on their priority list, the more likely that is aligned with what's most important to them. So whenever I'm communicating to a kid about what their experience is of leading up to a concert, I'm trying to help them see that whatever it is that they're fearing is actually going to help them in relation to what's most important to them. So if their favorite thing is, look, if I use football, might be a good example. We've used that a fair bit today. So it might be like getting up on stage and performing is kind of like playing at the grand final, and learning how to play, but also learning how to play in front of a large group of people are two different things. So I'm just helping them see that the experience of anxiety or fear that they might be experiencing is actually there to actually help them and actually to help them learn and grow and be able to handle more challenges like that or similar to that in their future. But at the end of the day too, like for kids when they're experiencing fear, I also let them know that their parents are probably more worried about them performing than they are, and they're probably experiencing some of the fear that the parent is experiencing. So I just let them know that this is part of the process, I let them know that they're just out of their comfort zone, and this is an opportunity to learn and grow, and it doesn't matter what happens, it's just the experience. And then I give them the option, I'm like, is this something you want to do? And if they say no, I'm like, okay, great, because then they learn how to say no for themselves, and I don't need to force them into doing it. And for those other kids that are sort of on the fence, I'm like, well, and they can go, yeah, okay. And then, you know, you have kids who are like, get there, and they're like, no. And then you have kids who get there, and they're like, nah, and then like, I want to get up. I'm like, okay, I have prepared for you. But yeah, at the end of the day, people are going to move forward in relation to things that are most important to them. So if you can help someone see that doing the music performance is going to help them with their favorite things, not yours or their parents, that's what's going to help them, you know, see that as more on the way instead of in the way.
Yeah, I think it's really important to highlight the fact that you said giving them the chance to say no and giving them the chance to opt out and make those decisions for themselves. And yes, sometimes we want to give our students a gentle nudge forward to encourage them, just get them to lean over the edge. But every now and then, if we sense the discomfort, just doubling down and forcing them to do things and putting them in a scenario where they are going to be traumatized by whatever transpires is obviously the wrong approach there. So it's great the way that you worded that in terms of highlighting the fact that there should be a choice there, and that even if they don't get up and perform, there's still a learning opportunity taking place there as well.
100%, yeah. It's like, you know, me pushing a kid out of their comfort zone is sometimes going to make them learn how to say no in the future, and sometimes it's going to give them the opportunity to actually go, actually, that was kind of cool. I liked it. And maybe they're not going to be musicians, but they might be comedians. They might be some other sort of performer or public speaker or something like that. So, you know, there's always an opportunity to learn, and you know, I've definitely had tears. I've definitely had kids that have been come back going, I'm never doing that again. I go, okay, great. and I guess it's holding space for them to go through those emotions. And, you know, when kids first started crying in my space, I was like, oh no, this is really bad. And I'm like, okay, but now I understand how important it is for them to actually then have the discussion about what happened. And I kind of feel like that's what I didn't necessarily get as a kid. I was told to be quiet, or, I did something naughty and I was told off, but I was never actually given the opportunity to then have a discussion about what actually occurred for me and what my experience was, to then see different perspectives and see different ways of seeing the world. And, these challenging situations for students are always an opportunity for us all to learn, because the kids or the students and clients are always there to teach you about part of you, and you're also there to teach them some things. So it's always, as long as we're taking the time to step back and go, I'm not trying to be right here, and I have learning and experiences to grow, and I still have them now, and taking it as an opportunity to learn and grow and actually really care about another human being, it doesn't matter how old they are, but then trying to figure out what their interests were and how their experience transpired for them, and seeking to understand their position, and then you know, that just makes you a better human being for all the students that follow.
100%. Where do we even follow that up with? That is absolutely amazing. I think we probably just better off going in a different direction, because I think in terms of just reflecting upon that, there's nowhere deeper to go. I think you've gone straight to the heart of the matter in being there for your students and helping them develop. And
teary moment myself. Yeah. It's like, oh, that's cool. That wasn't my experience of growing up, and there were people offering me those things, but maybe it wasn't in the way I wanted, but that definitely led me to be the person that I am with the skills that I do have. So very grateful for those people that provided that experience for me as a kid to be this person that I am now. So yeah, I just want to say thanks to my parents and all my teachers that didn't maybe have the level of understanding that I now I'm able to express to some of my students, and I still make mistakes along the journey. still kids and clients upset that I did something. They're like, oh, but it's just another opportunity to learn.
And that's such a great outlook, to have that opportunity to learn kind of mentality. And the fact, if we do go back, you know, full circle to what we said a bit earlier in the podcast, just how important our role is as a music teacher or even a sports coach or whatever it is where we're playing that early educator role or helping people learn, is it's not just, we're not just music teachers. We're, you know, coaches, we're therapists, we're friends, we're mentors, we're people guiding them, and we're helping them out in so many different ways. And that's such an important contribution that we, you know, have as music teachers to our students and the community in general.
100%. Yeah. That's why I think as I came out of my music teaching diploma, and I'm like, I'm a qualified teacher, and I started trying to squish my students into shape. I'm like, there's some gaps in my skill set, and I loved my teaching education because I learned more about how I learn. I was like, oh, this is great. I can steer my mentors in the direction of the things that I need. Like, I'm kinesthetic. I need to move. I need to learn things. But then I realized that there are some gaps in that methodology. So I was like, I need to learn more. I want to get deeper. I want to get to the heart of what makes a human being move or not move, and why are some successful and why are people not? Why are some people successful but still have horrible mental health issues or still have horrible relationship dynamics? I've definitely loved digging into all of those things to start uncovering all these problems behind the problems. So very, very grateful to be able to make a real difference, like, and become the person that I want, that I sort of needed as a beginning music student, but also as a beginning human, trying to feel my way through the world.
Yeah. And for those listeners who are interested in the human behavior and, you know, the psychology behind the teaching and what motivates people, what are some things we can go further and explore in that regard? Or what could we try with our own students?
Yeah, I think definitely trying to figure out what's most important to them. And I think we definitely, parents, myself included, we project onto others what we think should be important to them. But at the end of the day, everybody has a unique fingerprint. They have a new unique retina scan, and they have a unique priority set of priorities or values. And it's when we really take the time to really consider and understand where that person is coming from, to then be able to then guide and inspire them in the direction that we would love them to go through what's most important to them. I think that's definitely the starting point of that process. So yeah, I wouldn't say it's something that I can explain in an interview, but yeah, it's definitely, I think that's the core of it, is understanding and caring about another person, no matter how old they are, to be able to then yeah, connect what you need in relation to what they need.
Fantastic. And if you had to impart one final bit of advice for our listeners who are primarily a guitar teaching audience, what would that be in terms of music teaching advice or tips or business advice? Anything you want to share with us?
What have we covered already? I think, like, at the end of the day, like, you've got one chance to lead this life, and you're one in a trillion chance of being a this person that you are. So I guess Dolly Parton could be a cool person to quote at this point, is that to find out who you are and do it on purpose, and keep refining yourself as a masterpiece and keep learning and keep growing. And my original music, my band name is called Mega Love. I've sort of defined that word as being the constant and never ending pursuit of self-love. So just continuing no matter what. And as you change and evolve, just to continuing to learning and appreciating who you are as a person and helping other people to do the same.
That's some great advice there. And I hope the listeners are going to write down some of those absolute nuggets you've dropped throughout the course of this podcast. So unfortunately, we are near the end. Brett, where can our listeners find out a bit more about Mega Love as a project, your own personal coaching program, The Confident Musician, and keep up to date with all the other things you're doing?
Yeah, best place to go is my website, which is brettcusack.com, BRETTCUSACK. And there's links to all my social medias for The Confident Musician, for my original music, Mega Love, and my music school, which is called Glitter Fox Studios.
So on behalf of the guys at Top Music, Brett, I want to thank you so much for coming on to the podcast today. It's been an absolute pleasure having a chat. Good to finally catch up after all these years, and looking forward to hearing about all the wonderful things you continue to do in helping your students and coaching clients become more confident musicians. And hopefully some of our listeners can become more confident guitar players, more confident guitar teachers, having heard this interview today. Brett, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Michael, and enjoy, everybody. Thank you so much.
If you enjoy this show and want to hear more of our work, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For links and resources mentioned in this episode, including a free ebook on how to find more guitar students, visit us at www.topmusic.co/guitar or check out the show notes. And lastly, thanks again for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.